Welcome to Drivers, a podcast devoted to highlighting the latest trends in the golf industry and the people setting them. I'm David Klein, along with John Last of Sports and Leisure Research Group. And John, for today's episode, let me just say that you and I tease each other a lot about how old we're getting. But, you know, with age comes wisdom. And being researchers, we really look to find ways of keeping a fresh perspective on things and really keeping up and evolving with the times. One of the things I love to do is reconnect with people that we've grown up with in the industry. And our guest today is someone that you've known since your early days in golf, which spans a couple of decades. Why don't you tee up our guest for today?
Well, thanks for calling me old, David. You know, it is funny, but it seems like just yesterday that I entered the golf industry right out of graduate school. And it's always very refreshing and cool to see people that you cut your teeth in the business with have great success. And today's guest is probably example A of that, because this person was right there with me during my early days at the PGA of America staff. We both kind of learned together at the same time. And I'm so pleased to welcome the Chief People Officer of the PGA of America, Sandy Cross, onto Drivers. Sandy, tell everybody that we were both teenagers when we got started.
Oh, we were, John. Not many people were dual heading in high school like we were between academics and our careers. Yeah, absolutely. John, thanks for your kind words. It's such a pleasure to be here, and I'm excited for this conversation. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, me too. As much as I often say that, you know, once you work for the PGA of America, you always bleed blue and gold blood for a lifetime. I still am. You've seen so much more during your PGA career than even I did in the 8+ years that I was there. How has the organization evolved, and what are some of the biggest changes and current areas of focus that the PGA is working on right now?
The organization has evolved tremendously. So for the listeners, I've been at the PGA of America nearly 28 years, which is incredible to think about. I actually started out as a temporary employee. I was 90-day temp to perm while I was figuring out where I was going to work in the business of sports. But this temporary employment opportunity blossomed into a tremendous career. And I've been so blessed to have a front row seat for so many of the changes at the association. But the one thing that has remained consistent, John, since day one and is more important than ever is maximizing the value of PGA membership. So we now have more than 29,000 PGA of America professionals. And these are men and women who have chosen a career in the business of golf. A lot of them are great players, but they are working day in and day out in the business. So our number one charge continues to be maximizing that value of a PGA of America's membership with us. And we want them to be promoters of the association and promoters to other individuals to choose a career path in the business. And also, we really are focused on making sure that we deeply understand what consumers desire out of this amazing sport. Consumers from all backgrounds, identities, walks of life, ages, stages, abilities. And we want those consumers to understand the value of a PGA golf professional, someone that can help them on their golf journey, wherever they are in their journey, wherever they're starting, whatever their ability is. We want them to have that PGA golf professional coach with them every step of the way. So that's really paramount for us. We also continue to focus heavily on our championship assets and protecting those assets because they are the revenue drivers for the association, most notably the Ryder Cup and the PGA Championship. Also the KPMG Women's PGA Championship. Those are our coveted assets, kind of the family jewels, if you will, that we need to protect and elevate and advance and promote because they generate the revenue for the association. And then last, but certainly not least, John, is our people. We've got a team of just over 300 based in Frisco, Texas, and around the country. And we want to make sure that they are thriving and enjoying and coming to work every day and participating in purpose-driven work that they feel great about. So that's a top priority as well.
Now it's amazing to see what the association continues to accomplish. And, you know, as I think back and kind of have followed your career arc as we both grew through the industry, I've always admired your unwavering passion towards creating a more equitable game that actually does a great job of achieving a mission statement that we actually had, if you remember when I was there, and it was called Making Golf a Better Game for Everyone Everywhere. And it was funny because when I was there initially, I kind of questioned whether that was really an achievable mission. But now that you kind of step a little bit outside of it, as I have, it really is a very noble and accomplishable mission. I remember, you know, during our time together, both at PGA and when we served on the Executive Women's Golf Association board, that we really fought hard to push for more diversity in golf. And, you know, I never want to take our foot off the gas, but what have you seen that has finally gotten the industry to embrace this in recent years? I mean, we're finally making some really good progress, and what do we need to continue to do to sustain it?
Well, John, I love that you use the phrase foot on the gas, because that has been our approach since we started in the diversity and inclusion space with focused intention in 2014, is keeping our foot steady on the gas to advance inclusion in the game. Individuals from all backgrounds, identities, abilities. And the thing that has really evolved is the industry at large, our PGA of America golf professionals, as well as the industry at large, they recognize now and understand pretty deeply the business case for diversity and inclusion. And now they understand the business case and the why. They are really leaning into how do I operationalize inclusion at the point of play? The point of play being those golf facilities around the country and frankly, around the globe. You know, there's certain things we can do from our home office in Frisco, Texas to advance inclusion, but the rubber meets the road at the local level. When consumers come out, they're either going to have an amazing experience, feel welcome, invited, included, and they're going to want to come back with friends and family, or maybe not. They might have an experience that's off-putting and they don't come back. So we really have arrived at this stage where everyone in the industry is coming together to operationalize inclusion at that local point of play. And the industry has also broadened their lens on what inclusion means. It's no longer just about gender or just about race and ethnicity. It's ability, it's veteran status, family status, religion, gender identity, all of those dozens of dimensions of difference. So the industry has really broadened their aperture on how they think about inclusion and what it means. And the other material shift that has occurred, and you probably recall this from your time on the PGA team, is we were very focused on growth of the game, putting a golf club in a consumer's hand and giving them a taste of the game. We still do that. We still do growth of the game and player development. But what we also added is focused on evolving the golf industry workforce and evolving the golf industry supply chain. There's more than 2 million jobs in golf in the US annually, and more than $102 billion in the golf industry supply chain in the US annually. And evolving the workforce and evolving the supply chain creates more golfers. So instead of just working on one path, we're now working on three parallel paths: the game, the workforce, and the supply chain, mirroring the demographics of America. So that's been a material shift.
It's really great to see. I remember we often talk about PGA members, you know, they wear so many different hats in their roles, and those roles are continuing to change as well. Can you share with the listeners a little bit about how the PGA headquarters staff supports those efforts, and what are some of the critical success factors that the today's PGA members and associates need to adhere to?
Absolutely. Our team at the PGA of America, we've really started to hone our craft or hone our approach in terms of meeting our PGA of America members where they are. What are their needs, wants, and desires at the local level? They work in a wide variety of geographies with different seasonalities. They have a wide variety of employment circumstances, public, private, semi-private, daily fee, practice range, resort. So those come with a lot of different nuances. And they all have different family circumstances and in daily lives. So how can we meet them where they are and deliver our products and our services and our member experience in a way that they can deeply connect with and engage with? We want them to feel and receive high value from the association. So one, I was going to say small example, but maybe it's not. It was driven by COVID, and that's probably an obvious one. The level one curriculum delivery of our professional golf management program is now all virtual, which has really widened the funnel of individuals that can engage because it's virtual anywhere, anytime on your own watch. Now, levels two and levels three of that professional golf management program, you do come into our home office for check-ins, but tailoring wise, we have three very specific career paths now. We have teaching and coaching, which I think is maybe the more obvious one or the more known one for consumers. They think of our members as the coaches and teachers of the game, and they are. But we also have golf operations. Again, these are individuals managing the business of golf at facilities around the country. And third career path is executive management, which continues to grow. So it's a very important part of our business is to allow PGA members to engage on their terms, specialize in the areas and arenas that they want to, and then we support them along the way. We have a team of career consultants in the field that work with our members and employers every day, and a team of player engagement consultants to help our PGA members leverage programs like PGA Junior League, PGA Hope, PGA Team Golf, PGA Family Golf, harness the power of those products at the local point of play to bring more consumers from all backgrounds into this beautiful sport. And it's a sport for a lifetime, as you know.
Sandy, one of the things that I'm sure is keeping you very busy over the last few years is helping spearhead the move of PGA's headquarters from Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, to Frisco, Texas. Tell us a little bit about how you worked to ensure a successful staff transition, whether it be the change in the staff, the change in the culture, the change in the environment, et cetera.
David, thanks for asking about that. It was really, it's been a milestone or quite a chapter in the history of our association. We announced in the latter part of 2018 that we were going to relocate our corporate offices from South Florida, as you mentioned, to Frisco, Texas, who has branded themselves as Sports City USA. And there are so many exciting and attractive things about Frisco and the DFW market that brought us there and we're now benefiting from. But the relocation of our team over, frankly, a 4+ year period was really challenging. And I've often referred to it as culturally tumultuous, to be honest. Many companies relocate their teams over a one-year period. They kind of rip the Band-Aid off. They say, everyone has an opportunity to go. We hope you'll join us. If you don't, you know, we wrap it up. But we've really tried to lead with the heart and really be human throughout this whole process to give people a long runway and an ample runway, team members and their families, to make this big life decision about relocating to Frisco or not. And it's been challenging. It happened during COVID. We were also bringing a 660-acre campus online in addition to this beautiful home office that we have. And we elected to do this on our own versus bringing in a third-party subject matter expert to guide us through the process. You know, a lot of companies will get a third-party firm and say, oh, handle the relocation for us. We decided to do it on our own, and it was our first rodeo. I don't know that we'll ever do it again, hopefully not. But we've made it through to the other side. We feel really proud about it. We couldn't be more proud of our team for navigating it with us. But there were some bumps and bruises along the way, and we didn't get everything right. We tried to lead with the heart and be incredibly human and balance individual and family needs with what we thought was best for the business. But it was challenging. it was a challenging period and a lot of learnings, but a lot of proud moments too. And again, just, I take such pride in our team coming together and making that move.
And definitely a huge accomplishment. We have just a few moments left. I know, you know, we could talk for hours, and hopefully we'll get a chance to do that when we see each other at the Golf Inc. conference in a couple of weeks. Congratulations, by the way, on winning the Hilda Allen Award. We'll be there for that. As you look back at the career you've had to date, anything else that stands out as, you know, particularly something you're proud of accomplishing thus far? I mean, I know because we're so young still, we got more to go, but up to this point, what do you look back at?
There's a couple high points, John, and I've been so blessed to move around the business and work in a number of different areas and do different things. You know, I think back to the early days when I was in business and partnership development, some of those partners I was able to foster, those partnerships, are still with us today. Our longest standing partners, PepsiCo and National Car Rental, is two examples. Rolex is a leading partner for us. So just super proud of those relationships that I was able to foster early on. Also, I think about a program we have for our members. It's a supplemental retirement program called Golf Retirement Plus. We have 7,000 of our PGA golf professionals participating, and they've really been able to supplement their retirement income and build a meaningful nest egg for themselves. And it's a one-of-a-kind program that I was able to help shape. So really proud of that. So proud of starting the diversity and inclusion effort, which we touched on. And then lastly, this goes a little bit back to David's question. In the middle of our relocation in March 2020, we launched shared values for our employees. Up until that point in our history, 100 plus years, we didn't have shared values that anchored our team and provided connective tissue, how we show up each and every day for each other, how we behave, how we interact. So launching of those shared values is the thing that I'm most proud of recently. And I think provided, again, connectivity between our teammates through the pandemic, through the relocation. So I feel really, really great about those.
Awesome. And I remember the early days of Retirement Plus as well. So it's great to see that that program is thriving. And yeah, as always, great to see that you're thriving and that the association is as well. I thank you so much for being on the show, and looking forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you again, John. Thank you, David.